This is the Beer of the Day podcast.
From Beer of the Day World Headquarters in Elk Grove, California. This is the Beer of the Day podcast. Tonight we have a great show. I'm looking forward to it. The title of the program, Hop of the Morning. And we have four different hoppy beers to try tonight. A pale ale, an IPA, a red IPA, and a triple IPA. And it just so happens, today is May 1st, my 37th birthday. And this is our 88th podcast. So all around, all kinds of good things going on here tonight. I'm Dallas Helliker. Joining me tonight, Steve Williamson. And on Skype from Pasadena, Jeff Miller. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Dallas.
Thank you very much. Welcome, Steve. It's been a while since you've been on the program.
I know. Nice to be back. Thank you.
Well, we know how much you love IPAs.
So my favorite.
We have a show full of chock full of hop beers for you.
Well, they sound good. I'm excited to try them.
Before we get into the first beer of the night, does anyone have any beers they wanted to mention that they've had recently?
Jeff? I was going to mention. Yeah. So I took a trip up to Paso Robles a couple weeks ago and went to Firestone, one of our favorite breweries.
Oh yeah.
And you know, had some good beer there, but I thought what I wanted to mention on the show was what I brought home from Fireworks, which
Fireworks.
And
it was specific
Firestone. Can't even talk. Getting ahead of myself. Their Barrel Works division, which makes a lot of their barrel age, you know, wild ales, sour ales, saisons, all of that stuff. I brought back several bottles. They have a bunch out right now. Really excellent quality. They're not cheap. I mean, they cost $12 to $15 a bottle for, you know, one of the smaller size bottles. I think they're 375 milliliters, but they are excellent. One of them in particular, I actually put up on the website a couple of days ago as the beer of the day. It was called Peachy Bones, which is a wild saison made with white peaches. It was phenomenal. You know, one of these beers that is a little sour, but not too sour. It's right up my alley. So I was just really impressed with a lot of the beers coming out of Barrel Works. They are technically made in Buellton, which is along the Central Coast, south of Paso Robles. Firestone is Paso Robles, but their Barrel Works beers come out of Buellton. So I just thought it was a great visit, great beer from Firestone.
Did you get any split pea soup there?
I did not. I have before, but not this trip.
Did they sell all those there in Paso Robles, Jeff?
Yeah, they're all in bottles. Mm-hmm. Some of them they made for a while. Like I think, Dallas, you probably had like the Agrestic,
yes,
and Breda Rosé.
Oh, those are the same series. Okay.
Yeah, same series. They just got a bunch of them. I mean, they've been growing big time. They have Little Opal, which is great. They just have a ton of different ones, and they're all really high quality.
Yeah, I think you just mentioned four beers that we have in our fridge right now. And we have this Firestone show that we've always wanted to do, but we're waiting for David Walker to be on here.
Any day now.
Yep. Maybe for our 100th episode, we can do that. Okay. First beer of the day. We have from Fort George Brewery in Astoria, Oregon. This is the City of Dreams. It's a pale ale, 5.5%.
Not going to need my bottle opener tonight. I have four cans sitting here in front of me.
Four cans. A couple years ago, we would have had no cans.
So I've been out of the beer scene for a little while. I was going to ask, is this a new trend? Are people canning more now?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think cans over the last year or so have probably overtaken bottles as far as for like a lot of the breweries.
Yeah, especially in the IPA space. IPAs, double IPAs, it's most breweries, it seems like, are canning. I mean, it's even a little bit rare to see IPAs from smaller craft breweries that are in bottles still.
Yeah.
One thing I've kind of always liked about cans, I'm a big like on the visual, the marketing kind of aspect of the beers, and I think all four of these cans tonight, but this one I really like the design, the picture on the can. It's pretty cool. They can do a lot more with the wraparound. They got more space than on a label on the bottle. All four of these beers tonight, they look pretty cool.
They do. And just pour it into the glass, the beer looks pretty cool. It's a kind of a hazy, light golden straw color. I can see small little carbonation bubbles, but it's tough to see the bubbles through the cloudiness. The head is thin, maybe half a finger, and but pretty consistent all the way around. Kind of a little bit, maybe medium-sized bubbles that stick to the side of the glass for the lacing.
I think my head is pretty thick. I mean, maybe it just was just how I poured it, but I have a really thick, like frothy head.
I think ours dissipated pretty quickly. But definitely what stood out to me about this one was what Dal mentioned, the haziness. I mean, you can't see even halfway through the glass. It's real hazy.
Yeah, and you know, there's different degrees of haziness, and this is like, I think of turbid when I see this beer. I mean, it's like a yellow turbid color. It's super hazy.
The scent you get on the nose, I get like a real kind of light honey. You can kind of smell wheat, almost like a lager. It kind of has like a hints of a hoppy lager.
I get some wheat in the aroma. I mean, a lot of these hazy IPAs have oat and wheat as part of their malt. And that creates some of the haziness, and you get that in the aroma. I think it also smooths out the mouthfeel a bit. I also, you know, in addition to what you said, I get some pineapple, sort of tropical fruit on the aroma.
Yeah, it's it definitely has a high degree of fruitiness, tropical fruitiness, but it's avoiding being sweet. I'd say there's a little bit of tartness, kind of like maybe orange peel pith type of thing, or grapefruit even, probably more so grapefruit. And there's a dryness here. A lot of times you get these ultra juicy northeast style pale or IPAs and pale ales, and you get a lot of fruit juice, mango, pineapple type of flavors. Not with this one. This has definitely citrus, grapefruit, and lemon, but I'm not getting any type of tropical sweetness here.
I think you used the word pith, and I think that pith, just that word, is the perfect descriptor of this entire beer, from everything through the haziness, the color, the smell you get, and the flavor. I mean, it has that, people who like grapefruit, you eat a grapefruit and you get some of the pith in there, and it dries your mouth out while you eat it. So it's not overly sweet, not overly sour. It definitely has those characteristics.
Now, what's the ABV on this one?
We have 5.5.
5.5. So that is... it seems about right to me. Like, it doesn't seem over the top on the alcohol or the strength of it. It seems kind of reserved. There's a lot of hops here. Don't get me wrong. I mean, it's a ton of hop flavor, but the bitterness isn't overwhelming, and the sourness, the citrus sourness isn't overwhelming. It's kind of reserved, but definitely there.
My thoughts on this, I think it's very hoppy for a pale ale. This is sort of the flavor profile I expect from an IPA. So I think it's really hoppy. The flavor is pretty fresh and dank. I think there's zero bitterness. I don't know what the IBUs are, but there's basically no bitterness here. For those people that shy away from bitter beers, this is not one of them. I like the combination of the hops, but also the oat and wheat that I'm sure are probably in here. I don't know for sure, but I think that's part of the malt backbone, is some oat and wheat that just creates this really smooth mouthfeel. Nice carbonation. I think it's just a smooth, really classic, like Northeast style pale ale.
We say all the time on the show, or not all the time, but quite often we've referenced to a beer that you'd want to drink after you're mowing the lawn or on a hot summer day. And this is totally that. This is a beer you go out and do some yard work and want to come in and have a couple beers. You want to have a beer while you're watching a game. This is perfect. This is a really good beer.
It is. But when you say East Coast style, it's hazy, but I get a West Coast hoppiness from this beer. It's there's a definitely a bitterness that you're not going to find in a lot of those East Coast beers.
That's interesting. I don't get the bitterness. But
I mean, I'll say I kind of agree with both of you guys, because I think you guys drink IPAs all the time, so you're used to those huge hop profiles. And this beer, I mean, those are definitely muted down a lot. But for someone who doesn't drink IPAs, I mean, you can tell this is a hoppy beer compared to a lager. I mean, there's hops that are present and they're forward, but it's not anything on the scale of drinking like one of the big double IPA or triple IPA.
Well, it is hoppy. I mean, it's, like I said, it's hoppy for a pale ale, but I just don't get the bitterness. I don't know if they are purposely creating a Northeast style pale ale, but it's, you know, the cloudiness, I think, and just the color, I just gravitate towards the Northeast style.
I think I read somewhere that they were trying to, but I'm not sure. Could be.
I mean, it's all the rage still. I mean, even today I was at the store and I'm seeing breweries create new beers that every one of them is a hazy IPA, hazy pale ale.
Yep.
It's a trend that is not slowing down.
Not slowing down at all. All right, well, let's see what other kinds of trends aren't slowing down in the beer news of the day. Well, you always kind of see the name of a beer and see the packaging of a beer and you think, you know, maybe they've stepped over the line as far as infringing on people's trademarks, brands, whatever. Well, Knee Deep Brewing Company has a beer called Breaking Bud. It's a IPA that they've had for a couple of years, and now Sony is suing them for infringing on their Breaking Bad logo and other design elements in order to capitalize on the fame of the hit AMC series, which they say has been ranked by Guinness World Records as the most critically acclaimed show of all time and has been cited as one of the greatest television series in history.
There's no self-promoting in that lawsuit whatsoever. Don't play too much of that song, Dal. You're going to get sued.
They might. But hey, if Beer of the Day gets in the newspaper, then
it's worth it.
There's no such thing as bad press.
We have basically zero assets. It's not worth their attorney spending 1 hour.
Nope, there's no
coming after us.
Well, there's some beer in the fridge. Several hundred beers in the fridge. Worth several hundred dollars.
They're gonna take 20% of all your beer.
Yeah. Knee Deep's response, their CEO posted a statement in the Hollywood Reporter. I was surprised by the unexpected lawsuit filed against us by Sony yesterday, especially after they originally contacted us many years ago touting their appreciation for our Breaking Bud beer that made gentle fun of their show. Shortly after Breaking Bud was introduced in early 2015, I actually received an email from a Sony representative that said, it seems that Knee Deep team are big fans of Breaking Bad, and we really appreciate the call out to our very popular show. So soon after, they discussed like benefits of a partnership between the two, and those discussions never went anywhere. And now, a couple years later, they decided to go ahead and try and stop them. So, what do you think about this?
Seems like a really classic thing to me. Sorry, Jeff. It's easy for a big company like Sony to say like, oh, ha, 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 it's so cute you'd use our name and totally start being successful and making money off it. And then they're going to say, you know, hey, we're missing out on this. You're definitely infringing our rights on this.
I just think it's kind of silly. Like, to me, it's pretty clearly a win-win situation. I don't know why Sony needs to get upset about it.
But Sony doesn't need, you know, Knee Deep's beer drinkers to help their show do well. I mean, they're doing plenty well on their own. So they're looking at it as just they're losing money, you know, by not making money off of this product.
Yeah, and, you know, frankly, Breaking Bud is a phenomenal beer. It is one of the best knee-deep beers, in my opinion. I've had it several times. It's, I think, very easy to get now. I think they have pretty wide distribution.
Right.
I think it's a great beer, and, you know, it maybe it promotes the show, maybe it doesn't, but I don't think it hurts Sony in any way.
No, but what I think happened was Knee Deep had a lot of IPAs, and they had their Hoptologist, and they had their Simtra, and they is their triple IPA, and then they had some other ones, double IPAs, and they had a lot of beers, and Breaking Bud wasn't their main one, and it took off, and it's not like their hoppiest or most alcoholic beer. It's actually one of the more drinkable offerings, which I think actually caused it to sell better. Mm-hmm. And it just turned out to be a great beer, and now it's everywhere in every store. And I think it just got to be, instead of just one-off beer that they made, all of a sudden it became one of their flagship beers. And so now Sony's having to step in and get involved.
I think I'm picturing the label in my head, and I think everything on there except for Walter White has to do with, you know, I mean, that's the only thing missing is a picture of Walter White on the label, and it would be just a total ripoff of the show, of course, that they're going for. But, you know, from my perspective, I understand why Sony would do it. The first thing that stuck out to me when I saw this story was that I would have assumed that Sony would have given them every chance to say, hey, you got to cut, you can't make this brand anymore, give a cease and desist. And it surprised me that Knee Deep would think that it was worth a legal fight over, because it seems like going up against a big dog like Sony, you're just a little brewery, and I mean, it's a fight you're probably not going to win.
Right. I think they're not going to fight it. I think that Breaking Bud is probably dead.
Yeah.
But they came out with a news story and said, hey, you know, why are they doing it now when a couple years ago they were fine with it?
Yeah. I think I just always assumed from the beginning it was some sort of like partnership, because like you said, the label is so clearly like, you know, related to Breaking Bad, the show.
They have a little elemental chart up there and everything. And,
you know, what I hope they do is just that they keep making the beer because the beer is great. Call it a different name, yeah. Change the label, do whatever, but keep that recipe because it's a really good beer.
You think they could pull off the artist formerly known as Breaking Bud?
Why don't they just like change the spelling, like breaking like it's a car or something, and then I don't know.
But yeah,
as long as they got rid of like the element symbols and all the branding stuff,
yeah,
then why not call something Breaking Bud? That can't be, because if they like, you know, have like some sort of hop crushing grape squishing thing with feet or whatever, like you know, there's not, you're gonna be breaking bud in any
throw a pot leaf on the label and it'll all be good.
There you go. Yeah, just no meth. The other story, which was interesting, Green Flash and Alpine, which are a kind of a combined brewery at some point, one bought the other one, but they're one of San Diego's first big West Coast IPA maker. They kind of pioneered the style along with Stone and were one of the first ones out there. And they have been... I guess a few years ago they got bought by Comerica Bank, and now they have foreclosed on its loans and sold the assets of the company, other than the Virginia Beach Brewery, to WCIPA LLC, whoever they are, some other conglomerate, I'm not sure. So it's caused a lot of flux, question marks about the brands, what they're going to do. And I think right at this point, it all remains to be seen. But it's definitely odd when such a big time brewery in San Diego has these types of issues.
Yeah, we've been talking on the show for a while about how there's a bubble in the craft beer world, and even though I even say in the statement here from Mike Hinckley, from the CEO of Green Flash, how he says there's a general slowdown in the craft beer and such a huge you know, just such a huge influx of beers into the craft beer market that it's such a fierce competition. So
right, but yeah, we were talking a couple weeks ago about how Sam Adams and Sierra Nevada have slowed down quite a bit, and they're having to make changes with their beer lineups, and a lot of these other smaller breweries are kind of come into the market and run circles around them with their constant new brands and East Coast style IPAs and more, I guess, cooler looking cans and marketing. It's just kind of a fresher scene. And they're these big older craft breweries that have been around a long time have had the same product for a long time. They're not making any changes to Sierra Nevada Pale Ale or Green Flash West Coast IPA, or, you know, it's been the same thing. And all these other brands are coming out with new stuff all the time. There's this propensity for people to want to try new beers all the time. And the guys that have been around a long time are having to figure things out, figure out how to compete. They're certainly not growing how they used to. And some of them are even seeing declines. So it's in an ever-changing industry. You know, the bigger ones, a little bit tougher for them to change gears and make changes and move. And we're seeing the effects of that for sure.
This will be interesting to see what happens, because it just seems like that Alpine and Green Flash are very influential in the San Diego beer community, and they've been around from the beginning, even when they were separate companies, and they merged together because it just made sense. We'll see what happens. I think, you know, it's San Diego's been the hot spot for a long time. It's not the biggest growth anymore, I think. I mean, they add a ton of breweries all the time, absolutely, but they were sort of the first area to really get on the map in terms of craft beer, so who knows? Maybe they go start a new venture, partner up with somebody else. But my guess is they'll still be involved in some way.
Yeah,
it's a little ironic that the craft beer scene first exploded because everyone was tired of their dad's Budweiser, right? That you wanted something new and fresh and exciting. People wanted to try different things, and now it's kind of happening to the original craft breweries. It's happening to them. What happened to the big beer people? You know, it's kind of come full circle on them.
Exactly. That's for sure. You know, I think that green Sierra Nevada Pale Ale can, for people that are just up and coming now and starting to drink craft beer, that green can is like...
That's what your dad had. your dad drank Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Right.
You know, now you want to have the newest, coolest thing.
That's exactly right.
Well, speaking of green cans, how about that next beer?
How about it? We have Lucille. This is from Georgetown Brewing Company in Seattle, Washington, staying up in the Pacific Northwest. Lucille is 7.2%.
Oh, that smelled great just when I opened the can.
Georgetown is the first Seattle brewery I ever went to. The first time I went to Seattle as an adult, went to Georgetown Brewery. A friend took me there. At the time, you could only get their beers on tap. You know, they've been around for quite a while, but it was only within the last couple of years that they started canning their beers. So this is a nice treat that they have some distribution outside of their tap room.
Yes, for sure. I like the color of this beer. It's like your classic pale ale color, kind of a dark golden color. We're not in the copper area yet. It's still on the golden color side, but it is just a traditional golden color beer. The head is quite thick, white head, fluffy, one full finger on my glass, and it's sticking around. The lacing's interesting. It doesn't stick to the side of the glass. I can pull it up and down, and then the foam just slides along the side of the glass like there's oil or something. Like the beer is a little oily, keeps it lubricated.
Love that beer oil.
I love the aroma.
Yeah, it's great aroma.
You know, straight like pine and citrus, which Northwest IPAs especially are known for pine. I mean, you kind of expect a pine aroma, but it is, it's been 2 months probably since this was canned. You know, it's not the freshest beer we have, but it still has a really strong pine and citrus aroma.
Yeah. When you think of the Pacific Northwest and those West Coast Cascade hops, that type of thing, this smells just as you would expect. And then it's not a hazy beer like that other beer. It's not, you can't really see through it that well, but it's not, it doesn't have the, like the overt haziness that the previous beer had.
Yeah. It's not that hazy style. What's popular now, but it is hazy in terms of you can't see right through the glass.
Right.
Yeah.
But it's not a hazy beer. Right. I mean, it's West Coast style. It's just not clear.
Yep. Classically hazy.
Oh yeah.
I like it.
So this is a IPA, huh? 7.2%. Now, I don't get the 7.2%. This is so drinkable. It's got some of those tropical fruit hop flavors. This reminds me a lot of Deschutes Cinder Cone back in the day. It reminds me of the Bale Breaker Top Cutter quite a bit. A lot of the same general vicinity in the country. And it's just a style of beer that is unique to that region, and the flavors are just so tasty.
Yeah, I got to say, you know, I, of course, don't love IPAs. It's well documented. This is a really, really good beer. I mean, I could definitely drink a few glasses of this. This is good.
Now, bitterness, I think this is less bitter than the previous beer. I get very little bitterness here. It's a hop. It's a hoppy beer, but it doesn't have that sour pithiness, dryness. There's a little more sweetness, a little more fruit to this one. And to me, that just makes it more of an inviting flavor. It makes me want to take the next sip faster.
I think what it is, you know, going back to the last beer, maybe it's a mental thing. Like my brain is programmed with what I perceive to be a hazy Northeast style beer to not be bitter. And when I want a classic West Coast style IPA, my mind thinks bitterness. And I think there is some mild bitterness here. It's enjoyable. It's not bitter, but it's very pleasant. So maybe it's a mental thing for me.
No, I agree with you. A couple notes.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's more on the bitter side than the last one, definitely.
I think a couple notes I wrote down in terms of the taste. I liked that this has some maltiness up front. There's this like doughiness and breadiness. Dallas mentioned some sweetness. There's a little bit of sweetness. But on the hop flavors, there's a lot of that resinous pine, but also some citrus. And it's almost like a lime, like lemon lime citrus, that makes it really clean on the finish. And there's a little, it's not sour, but it's just like a little freshness that just overcomes everything.
And for me on this one, the bitterness is a little cumulative. Like the more sips I take, the more I get the bitterness lingering on the tongue. So I would put this a higher IBU than I initially thought on my first sip.
Yeah. From the City of Dreams, I think the bitterness that was in that beer per se is more of a sourness. You get like the grapefruit, the juice kind of that. And this is more of a hop bitterness, where you get that and you just know that you're drinking a good hoppy bitter beer.
On the can it says, please refrigerate. Warm beer sucks.
True that.
That's good. Really good.
I'll listen to a little Lucille while I enjoy the end of this glass of Lucille. And that is going to finish up the first half of the show. When we come back, we have an experimental J-Hole beer, a collaboration from Melvin Brewing Company and Rheingeist. We have comments from the listeners, and then we'll finish it off with a triple IPA from Anchorage Brewing Company. All that, when we come back, you're listening to the Beer of the Day podcast. All right, if you like this show and want to help us out, the best way you can do that is by rating and reviewing our podcast on iTunes. If you go to their iTunes, you type in Beer of the Day, click that 5-star. I mean, you can rate it 4 or 3 or 1 if you want, but we prefer 5. You type a review, and then that's going to help us move up the rankings in the iTunes store. And that way, when people come along and say, man, I want to listen to people drink beer and talk about it, you know, then they're going to find us first. So rate and review us on iTunes. Let's get back to the show. Beer of the Day podcast. Our next beer from Melvin Brewing Company, one of our favorite breweries in Alpine, Wyoming. This is their experimental J-hole. I think that stands for Jackson Hole, but it's my new favorite insult. This is a collaboration with Rheingeist from Cincinnati, Ohio, and one of Britton and Joel's favorite breweries. They've been there before. We got to go to Melvin someday.
I think that J-hole is a better insult in Old English, like ye old J-hole.
Color's pretty clear, like a pale amber, maybe a little bit darker than that.
Yeah, this is a darker beer. Each beer has gotten progressively darker. This is a kind of a dark amber color. You know, maybe copper color. It looks like a penny from 1976. Now, head-wise, it's kind of a cream-colored head, but it is quite thick. I mean, I've got two fingers here, and it is it's sticking around for sure.
But it's kind of got a frothy head like Coca-Cola has.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Where it's like fizzy a little bit.
Yeah, but even more so than Coca-Cola, like it's kind of a root beer float kind of head.
Yeah.
Yep.
Right on.
Now this is a red IPA, is what they're calling it. Aroma wise, what do you get? I'm not getting a whole lot compared to the last beer. Maybe my receptors have been burned by Lucille a little bit.
I get a little nuttiness. Like this is probably going to be a malt forward IPA, I'm guessing. There's some nuttiness that I get.
Yeah, chestnut or something.
I was curious how fresh this one is. How long have you had this around for?
Less than a month.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Maybe 2 months. I mean, it's still definitely, you know, relatively fresh.
Call it a month and a half.
Because the aroma is
relatively.
The aroma is pretty muted on there. Not a lot coming off the aroma.
But it could be the style too. Like I think the hop forward IPAs are going to have a little more aroma than the malt forward ones. And this is definitely more malt forward. There's a breadiness here, kind of a, not a rye, but maybe like a wheat bread type of breadiness. Maybe like the, that bread they give you at, Outback Steakhouse.
Mm-hmm. Pumpernickel.
And then there's a sweetness here too, kind of the caramel, toasted caramel or burnt caramel type of sweetness.
You guys knocked it out in the describing the head, kind of that root beer or cream soda. I get some of that in the taste too. I mean, it has a nice creaminess to it that you could kind of get from something like that.
Yeah. Well, wow. The first sip, because I was transitioning, you know, a hard downshift from a hop beer to a malt beer. But now my taste buds have adjusted a little bit, and boy, that is just a smooth, well-balanced beer, really, between the malt and the hop.
I really enjoy it, and I like both of these breweries, but I was a little afraid that I wouldn't like it because red IPAs are a style that I generally do not. But I think this one is very smooth. It has a little bit of the nutty flavor that I got in the aroma. It could be some rye, maybe some dark bread, but it's quite hoppy as well. It's just very well balanced, and it's extremely smooth with really no bitterness that I have so far.
That's kind of a trademark of Melvin beers, where they do super hoppy beers that aren't bitter, which is what I know them for. And it kind of defies logic, or like I've never really experienced that as well as other beer breweries aspire to that, but Melvin usually knocks that out of the park. Now, this is a style for them that I haven't had before, where they're not going like all out balls to the wall IPA. They're actually doing a kind of a more malty one, which I think Rheingeist is more suited for. They do more malty brews, a little more balanced brews. They don't do like the full steam ahead IPAs from what I've seen. A lot of the beers I've had from them are their stouts and more malt forward styles of beer. So I think it's a good collaboration because you're getting the IPA side from Melvin, and then you're getting the malt side from Rheingeist is how I interpret it.
I think you're exactly right. I like this flavor a lot. This is better than I expected. I mean, I think I picked this up because it's two breweries that I like, and I like to see that collaboration. The redness, red IPA, it's good. I don't know why it's experimental, though. Do we know anything about why it's called J-Hole? I mean, J-Hole, Jackson Hole, it's close to where Melvin is located. Maybe Rheingeist came there and they worked on it together and they just named it Experimental J-Hole.
Yeah, I like the beer a lot. It's hard for me to say that I'm tasting this and thinking that I'm drinking an IPA, though. I mean, without that big hop profile is what I typically think of when I'm drinking an IPA. And I don't know if I've ever had a red IPA or not. And I don't, maybe that is a typical fashion for that type of beer. But I wouldn't even know what I would call this. I enjoy it, but I don't know. I wouldn't know how to classify it any other way.
I'm sure you've had some like red ales.
Yeah.
And it's like that, but it's on the hoppier side.
Mm-hmm.
The 7% is really perfect. It's not boozy. It's not light alcohol. It's really, I think, where the alcohol percentage should be.
I don't mean this as any kind of insult to Melvin's crafting process, but if you told me that this was like a new style of beer that Newcastle put out, I might be like, yeah, I could see that. It kind of tastes like it has like a Newcastle kind of feel to it.
The mouthfeel.
Yeah.
I get why you say that. I sort of thought of Ruthless Rye from Sierra Nevada having this, but Steve, you bring up a really good point. Like, this is not a sweet beer for how malty this is for an IPA. There's not much sweetness, and I think that's why we like it. We don't like the malty IPAs that are overly sweet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's also like an earthy characteristic to it. I mean, it even as I've kind of gotten into this beer here, I mean, muddy doesn't sound appealing, but it has almost like a muddy characteristic to it where it's earthy. It's kind of heavy, but it's not sweet, but it's not, I mean, there's hop there, but it's not hop forward. It works well.
Yeah, it does. I think they knocked it out of the park for this style. I really do.
Incoming transmission.
You've got mail.
Comments this week. IPA lover from Ventura, California, posted on Butte Creek Organic Pale Ale from Butte Creek Brewing Company. Just wondered if there was a mislabeled batch that was sold to grocery outlet. I searched for the IBU on the label and found none. I thought I'd give it a chance. My first impression was that it has a very Pilsner-like taste. Certainly not my favorite. I realize it's a pale ale, not an IPA, which is my fave, but it's not to my liking. The finish is better than the first taste, but not very hoppy. I truly wish I had liked it because I try to support craft organic brews, but I won't be buying it again. Yeah, IPA lover, it's always, it's no good when you find one that is not up to your standards. Generally, I hate to say it, but in my experience, when it says organic, it's usually not the best flavor you're going
to
get.
You tend to pass those ones by in the grocery aisle.
Yeah. So, couple people posted on Tenured Double IPA from Levity Brewing Company. We featured this as the beer of the day a couple days ago. On the website, you had me at Dark Beer, said one of my favorite local IPAs, Levity Brewing rocks. And then two people posted on it on Facebook. Gary Allwine, one of my favorite double IPAs, and Luke McKelvey. Oh, love me some Tenured. It's one of our top-selling beers at Levity Brewing Company. Thanks for the feature, beer of the day. He must work there. Jeff, where'd you get this one at?
So I got this from Tavor. It sounded interesting. I've never had a beer from Indiana, Pennsylvania. I was confused. I didn't know if I had those switched or what, but it's from Indiana, Pennsylvania. So I thought, why not get it?
Must be right there on the border, huh?
Well, it generated some comments. Also generating some comments, we posted on Fleek from Stillwater Artisanal Ales in Baltimore, Maryland. Greg 311, he is from South Bend, Indiana. He said, didn't really like it, rated it in the twos. And CJ Sports Pod from Portland, Oregon said, this is by far my favorite stout in a can. Add Alesmith Speedway Stout to the list as well. And then that generated a comment from a user called Suck Me. I'm going to have to use my bleep button here. He responded to Greg and CJ Sports Pod. He said, you guys are Greg 311 is a CJ Sports Pod. You are a Alesmith Speedway stout sucks disease donkey compared to On Fleek.
Well, it's nice that Levity and On Fleek have their reps commenting on our posts. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So we couldn't even post that on the website. It was so vulgar. So we deleted it, but we kept it, and we'll put the little bleep button to good use. But the thing is that, you know, the on the On Fleek, CJ Sports Pod said that it was his favorite stout in a can. So he was agreeing with him. But he didn't like that he threw Alesmith Speedway Stout in there also.
It's got nothing on Fleek.
No.
What's funny is all of those are really good beers. I mean, On Fleek is a great Imperial Stout in a can. Speedway Stout is one of the best stouts you can get. I mean, they're all good. So we don't need to, you know, fight amongst ourselves.
Well, it was kind of entertaining. I mean, we don't get that many comments, but when we do, it's good when they move the needle like that. All right, let's get into the last beer of the night. We have from Anchorage Brewing Company in Anchorage, Alaska. This is the Patterns Triple IPA.
I've really been looking forward to this one.
9.5%, which is actually kind of low for a triple IPA, I think. I mean, you get a lot of doubles at 9.5%. Now, we should look at the can and confirm that's the case.
Beautiful.
It is 9.5.
And there's also beautiful patterns on the can.
Yeah. It's like that's the name of the beer.
Go figure.
So this beer also is pretty turbid. I know I said that about the first beer, but it's hazy. Like a golden amber color. Is it more golden than amber?
Yeah, definitely more gold.
More golden than amber. Very little. I wouldn't say this is amber. It's like
almost yellow.
Yeah, kind of a yellow color. I say straw. Thick,
pretty thick, white, creamy head.
Creamy, smaller bubbles on this head.
But I think haziness and color, almost real, real similar to the City of Dreams, the first beer tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So on a triple IPA, generally it's a high alcohol beer, and they're upping the sugar on the beer to get that high alcohol. So usually it's sweeter and boozier, and we'll see if that's the case on this one.
I'm a little worried on the aroma. I'm getting some pretty intense hop aroma. So not my alley of beers here, but
it's very hoppy. There's a lot of like tropical fruit and melon. I think this is going to be different from triple IPAs we've had in the past.
Yeah, but I think it will be pretty hoppy.
It's going to be hoppy.
First sip, I'm very pleasantly surprised. It was not hop forward to me at all. Really, really good. I mean, just a nice, solid flavor. Not sweet, not overly sweet, not overly hoppy.
No, and it balances the citrus hop flavors. A little pine, a little citrus, but it's very well balanced. You know, we have a Melvin beer, then you have this one. And this kind of tastes a lot like a traditional Melvin beer, where they get those fruity, juicy flavors, high hops, but low bitterness.
I think it's really hoppy. I think it's dank. I think it's like a juice bomb. I get like tons of tropical fruit right off the bat.
I get a lot of flavor, a lot of juice flavor, a lot of tropical flavor, but I don't get hoppy in terms of, oh my gosh, it's so bitter, I can't drink it, which is why I get a lot from double and triple IPAs. But
let me clarify. I think it's very hoppy, but it's not bitter. It is a bit of the Northeast style, and then it's not bitter, but it's very hoppy, very juicy. I mean, I'm like licking my lips. It's got this like juicy stickiness to the mouthfeel.
Definitely.
Yeah, this is probably a little sweeter than I would want to drink to have a pint of it, but I think for a taster, it's a great taster beer. It's got a lot of great flavors in there, but it might be a little much for me to have a lot of this.
Yeah, I could probably drink a whole pint of this, no problem. I could see this being on tap at the bar and enjoying more than I should.
I think it's very drinkable, especially some triple IPAs are intimidating, or you have to share with your friends. I could easily drink a lot of this. I think it's great. I think it is slightly sweet. Steve mentioned the sweetness. It's a little sweet. I don't think it's overly sweet. It's got drinkability of like a Northeast style IPA, but in like triple IPA format. The 9.5% is great. I wouldn't want any more than that, but this is really solid flavor.
No. Triple IPAs, I mean, like I said, you get a lot of double IPAs at 9.5%, but I think triple should be 9.5. Like, you put the triple at 9, put the double at 8, put the IPA at 7, put the pale at 6, and just standardize that, and just do that, and don't go to 10. You don't need to go to 10.
What about 11?
Don't need to go to 11.
I think it's still a very well balanced beer. I mean, these beers are hoppy. I get the tropical fruit, like I said, from the beginning, like some mango and pineapple. But I think there's some oat and wheat malt in that creates this like texture that's a little dry and soft is the texture that I think of. We've had Claremont craft ale beers from LA area that have this creamy, soft texture, and the Melvin beers, very similar in the texture, and I really like that in a beer, and I really, you know, think this is a phenomenal beer.
I don't want to come across as this beer isn't good or I don't like it, because I do like it, but I think it could be more balanced. To me, I'm looking for more bitterness out of this, ironically, because I don't love bitterness, but as I get farther into this glass, I get this, it's more sweet, more sugary, and I could use a little bit more of the dry hop, a little bit more bitterness in there.
And that's why I think this is a true triple IPA. I prefer double IPAs personally, just because the triples get too sweet. So while I like the fact that this beer is not overly alcoholic, I do think that they're right in calling it a triple IPA because the sweetness is the primary characteristic here. Or as much as the hops versus on a double IPA where the hops is the primary thing that you're looking at.
But I think the sweetness is in a hoppy sense, whereas most triple IPAs I've had are sweet in a malty sense. And it's just a different flavor that I prefer. It is sweet and it accumulates, but it's definitely a TIPA. TIPA, is that okay to say a TIPA?
The tip of the iceberg.
But it is sweet and hoppy, and I think Anchorage is doing nice things with their beers.
I think so, too. I don't know what they're doing up there, but they're doing something. Okay, well, let's recap the beers we've had tonight, Steve, and then we will spin the wheel and figure out what our favorite beer of the day is.
All right, so first we tried the City of Dreams out of Fort George Brewery, Astoria, Oregon, and then we moved on to the Lucille from Seattle, Washington, Georgetown Brewery. We had the experimental J-Hole after the break from Melvin in collaboration with Rheingeist, and then we just finished up the Patterns Triple IPA from Anchorage Brewing Company.
All right, let's spin the wheel here, and we will see who will go first. Hey, Steve here. Can you take this microphone and put it down by the wheel? There you go. Much better.
Sorry about that. I was slacking in my mic duties.
And Jeff is going to go first today.
Oh, awesome. I was hoping I could go first.
This is a tough one. Isn't it?
It's really tough.
These were all quite good.
It's really tough, and I'll tell you why. I thought that Anchorage Patterns Triple IPA was one of the best Triple IPAs I've ever had. Mm-hmm. And therefore, I should probably pick that.
Yep.
The Rheingeist Red IPA, probably one of the best red IPAs I've ever had.
Agreed.
And I should probably pick that.
Definitely.
But I think from the beginning, I thought the Lucille IPA was my favorite and my beer of the day from Georgetown Brewing. I drink a lot of IPAs, and I've had a lot of good IPAs, but this is one of the, like, you know, it's probably not the best IPA I've ever had, but I just thought tonight it was so good. I drink a wide variety of styles of beers, and just to go back to a classic West Coast style IPA from Seattle with the pine and the citrus flavors, it was the perfect beer. And it's lots of great beer tonight, as Dallas says, but I'm going to pick Lucille IPA as my pick for tonight.
You said it perfectly. The Patterns was a great triple IPA. The Rheingeist Red IPA, maybe the best red IPA I've ever had. It's better than Flipside. It's better than many red IPAs. But I take one sip of that Lucille, and I'm like, this is the beer that speaks to me. It tastes like all those best Northeast or Northwest IPAs that I had in the past, and just love it. So Lucille is my beer of the day.
It's definitely going to be a consensus there. Lucille, I mean, from the very first crack of the can, the aroma that came off it was great. The flavor was great. It's a really, really good beer. It's going to be tough to beat that if you're an IPA fan.
All right, well, since we all picked Lucille, I'll just close it out with this one. Wow, it was a good beer, but we had all kinds of good beers tonight. You can't go wrong with any of these four, so if you see them out there, pick them up, because if you like IPAs or hoppy beers in general, you will enjoy those. All right, well, we're going to close it down for tonight. Next week, or not next week, but in 2 weeks, we'll be back with another show. I believe we went through the beer of the day inventory, and we had a bunch of kind of lighter beers for the style. So, like, I think there's a session barley wine, kind of a hoppy pilsner type of beer. So it's like classic beer styles, but lower alcohol, a little bit on the lighter side. So look for that in a couple of weeks, and we will be back then. Until then, check out our website, beerthedday.com. We like to receive your comments, so you can send your comments to us on email at feedback@beerthedday.com, or you can post your comment on any web page on our site. We're also on Facebook, facebook.com/thebeeroftheday. We are on Instagram at beeroftheday site. And we're on Twitter at Beer of the Day. Each and every day on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, and beeroftheday.com, we feature a Beer of the Day. All these beers on the podcast tonight will be the Beer of the Day at some point in the future. And you can subscribe on the website. We'll text message you the beer each day. We'll send it straight to your email. We post it on all social media. So if you follow us, you're going to get beer content in your inbox or news feed every single day. So definitely check out Beer of the Day on the web. We will see you in 2 weeks. For Steve Williamson and Jeff Miller, I'm Dallas Helliker. This has been the Beer of the Day podcast.